For some of these things, the years that you were the head of the California Farm Bureau Federation.
She remembers the dates better than I do. I left.
You were there for 12 years.
Well, I became president of California Farm Bureau the day that President Kennedy was assassinated. That tells the date.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for 12 years.
And ended in 1976.
And then I was retired for 10 days until they asked me to run for the presidency of the American Farm Bureau, and I was elected to that and stayed there 4 years, and then asked them to get someone else.
So that was beginning in
1976 to 1980.
And let's see, you were also president of the State Board of Agriculture?
Yes.
When was that?
All the time that Reagan was governor. And on the Board of Regents during that same time.
Oh, well, really, for the university?
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I did not like, and I don't like it now, and that is the liberal regents wanted to lower the standards for the blacks and the Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that was unfair to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we managed to hold the line to some degree, but not entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I understand Santa Cruz campus still has pass-fail, mm-hmm. no grades, which is, in my opinion, a mistake.
Mm-hmm. You were a dairy farmer?
We had a dairy for 38 years, and during those 38 years, we also raised the swine for 24 of those years, and raised feed for both animals.
Where was the farm?
Nearby Sadie. Mm-hmm. I started out though as my dad died when I was 22 and left me four brothers and two sisters and a mother to take care of all the children younger than I, and I became the head of the family. And so that stopped my education. So I don't have any degree except the honorary doctorate degree. And all of those brothers have degrees except one. Two. One is retired now, but he was chief engineer for Hydro Corporation, only engineer in their crew without a degree.
Hmm.
And the other one is in business for himself, and he was satisfied with junior college.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of them are educated.
Was your mother living?
No, my mother died quite a number of years ago. I don't remember what year it was. My father died when I was 22, and my mother was, how long was she a widow?
I don't remember, but she died in her 80s when she was 84, I think, wasn't it?
78.
But your father died before she did.
Yeah, long before.
When he was 22 is when his father died.
And your son is in, what is he, what kind of farming is he doing?
We have two daughters, and one, the eldest daughter, is a school nurse at Augustine and Augustine Church, and also she taught English 1 year there when they were short of teachers. And the second daughter is in business with her husband in Vice City. They have a brake and wheel shop in addition to having a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And the eldest son owns a rest home right over here, a little ways, and another one down at Ojai, and another one up at Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest son was in agriculture until his wife left him, took three children home for a mother and father last year.
Mm-hmm. You left out Ed.
Hmm?
You left out Ed.
The middle son is an engineering.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest son tried for a year to get the family back together, but he hasn't got it done.
It's too bad.
Yes.
You mentioned on the phone something about you came to Chowchilla to help
a son
with, that's the one you were just mentioning,
yeah.
about. So he has some a farm here?
Yes, he farmed here for 9 years, I guess it was, wasn't it, Irene?
Seven and a half.
Mm-hmm. And we bought the farm for them to start with.
Uh-huh. So you're kind of managing that for him at this point?
Yes. And he doesn't want it anymore mm-hmm. because his wife's not oriented to agriculture. And mm-hmm. so and there are too many nostalgic memories there, so right. he wants to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So we're in the process of operating it until we can sell it, lease it, or something.
How long have you, how many years have you been an elder? When, about when was it that you became an elder?
Well, I don't remember what year, but when our young eldest daughter was, we took her to Sunday school, and then soon thereafter I became an elder, and so it would have been probably, how long ago? 50 years, something like that, I don't know.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
So like in the 30s or 40s? Or
in the 40s, sometime in the 40s.
We don't feel as old as we are most of the time.
You don't feel like, are you an elder too?
No, I was a deacon, but I was never an elder. Yeah.
So one of the things I'm trying that I'm interested in knowing from you was what happened in the church here in the Valley, particularly in the Valley, during that period of between 65 and 75. That's the year, those are the 10 years I'm looking at in my book, in terms of the question of whether to support or not support farm workers organizing. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in, you know, getting your recollections about what happened. And I'm certainly interested in knowing what happened in your own congregation, because you were in the Visalia Church at that time, right?
However, I was in the church, but I was out because I was 16 years active in the Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm. So you were up in Berkeley at that time?
Berkeley for 12 years and Chicago for 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was away, mm-hmm. but I do know what was happening. For one thing, Angela Davis was one of the main church people had.
Yeah.
And the church's attitude toward Angela Davis. And it wasn't just Angela Davis. It seemed to be an overwhelming question in the minds of people in universities about changing a way of life and changing mores and so on. And I can remember coming from leaving a Regents meeting one time. The policeman stopped me and said, wait a minute, where are you going? I said, I'm going out the car. I'm going to leave. Oh, no. He said, you can't go yet. He said, we'll get several Regents and we'll escort you to the cars. And so as we went out to the cars, a crowd of, I really don't call them students, but fellow travelers or whatever one wants to call them. Some of them were students, but most of them were what some people call street people. Anyway, hangers-on at the university, and there always are those kind of people. Good times and bad. They're always hangers-on. And there was a young lady, just as pretty as any young woman is in her early 20s, and she was cursing me to the nth degree and calling me every kind of a name but a pet name. And I stopped, and the policeman grabbed me by the arm and said, come on, we have to hurry. He said, we might have violence. And he asked, what do you stop for? I said, I was looking at that girl and thinking, what in the world would her mother think if she could hear what's coming out of that woman's mouth? They were just beyond belief as far as their attitude and behavior was concerned. And that, along with many other things, affected the church. Not just Cesar Chavez, not just farm labor, but the church's attitude toward social, political, and economic problems, and the forgetfulness on the part of the church about evangelism and the church's main reason for being was left out of the thinking. And social, political, and economic actions seemed to be in the forefront in the church. And I watched people leave the Visalia Church. They didn't leave the church, capital C. they left the Visalia Church and they joined a fundamentalist church or some church that did not take action politically, socially, and economically, that had a more basic reason for being. And I think that's a big part of it. It was not just farm labor, it was all these forces together that caused the problem. For instance, when I was superintendent of the Sunday school, we had 950 members in the Visalia Church, and the Episcopal Church had a handful. I can remember a dozen and a half elderly ladies coming out of the building that housed them. It wasn't really a church building, it was an empty store building. And now the Episcopal Church has 1,250 members and we have 750. So something happened more than Cesar Chavez. And I don't condemn Cesar Chavez. Many people do. He had an objective and he intended to get there, and he did what he thought he needed to do to get there. And I don't like some of the things he espoused, but he always respected me, I believe, because I can remember being on the same platform with him from time to time. And he would mention to the audience, now don't think all farmers are like Mr. Grant. They're not. He's different from the rest of them. And putting me up in order to put others down is not my idea of the thing to do.
But that was probably true.
Well, we did try to lead. We do try to lead. That's part of our responsibility theologically. We had hospitalization insurance for our employees. We had health insurance. We had life insurance. We had work clothes furnished for the men at the dairy so they'd always be clean. And we had a day off a week, and then they asked me to change that. And they asked for this. They said, if a day off comes in a rotation on Saturday, can we have Saturday and Sunday off? And we take every eighth day off instead of every seventh day. It'll come out about the same. I said, sorry with me if that's what you want to do.
How many employees did you have? How many employees?
We had about 17 at the most.
But that isn't the way we started out. We started out with this one hired man. We paid him $1 a day, wasn't it?
Well, a long time ago, I'm sure.
We started out without any hired man. We started out with sharecropping before when I started. My father died, as I said, when I was 22, and it was my responsibility to feed the family. And so I started farming, and I didn't know anything about farming. I wasn't raised on a farm. Hmm. So I had to learn after I started. So a year and a half after I started, the man from whom I leased went broke, took away my share of the increase and left me his bills to pay, so I started over. And I admit freely that a grown man in our culture is not supposed to cry, but with that kind of a load and all, and we had just gotten married, and I moved my mother and the two youngest to town, so there wouldn't be two of them in charge of the same household, which indicates some degree of intelligence on my part. Maybe not maximum, but some. But anyway, I admit that I went down to the river, and the Lord and I talked it over for several hours before we figured out how does one get out of this blind alley? There has to be a way. There is a way, but what is it? But we got it figured out. And so we went ahead and did it. And in those days, farmers usually had 6, 8, or 10, or 15 dairy cows. They separated the milk and sent the cream to the creamery. And she and I went to different farmers, and I said to them, first I went to the lady who had taken the place away from that man. And told her, I can't leave here because I got this large family. But I'll be here next year, and I'll pay you 2 years' rent next year and nothing this year. She said, okay. So we were still in business. And then she and I went to these various farmers, and I offered them $25 a head for their Holstein cows. No money down, no interest, and we'll pay for one cow a month out of the milk check. And they said, okay. So she and I drove those cows home, so anywhere a foot, 12 to 20 miles, depending on where we made the deal. So we were back in the dairy business, separating milk. And then I found an ad in the paper that said a man had 17 brood sows he wanted to sell. And I went to see him, and he couldn't make up his mind what he wanted for them, but finally he did. He said, would you give me $2.50 each? And I don't know where I got the money, but I bought them. Took them home, fed them skim milk, and they had acorns from the oak trees on the ranch. And so in no time at all, we had a herd of brood sows for $2.50 times 17. And the ranch was 840 acres, only 120 of it farmed, so it was grass. And I went to see a man down at Point Conception that I knew because I'd been to his place, stock judging when I was in high school. And brash as a 24-year-old can be, when he said, "What can I do for you?" I said, "Maybe I can do something for you." And he said, "Well, kid, what in the world would that be?" I said, "Well, you haven't had much rain for 2 years, and you've got these cattle to feed, and you're buying hay. I'll take a carload of your Hereford weanling steers, and I'll charge you 75 cents a month for each one to feed them for 2 years. Take a carload of your weanling Hereford heifers. We'll value them at $25 a head. At the end of 2 years, I'll pay you the difference between what I owe you and you owe me." He said, "I never heard of such a thing, but I'll do it." So we were in the dairy business, the hog business, the beef business in about 6 months with $2.50 times 17. And she cooked on a wood stove for 5 years and used kerosene lamps for 5 years and cooked for all those teenage brothers. And in those days,
we practiced on them.
In those days, we boarded the hired help, and so she had to cook for them. So she baked bread. We didn't buy bread. And she cooked for them and sewed for these brothers and so on. And so everything worked out.
A lot of work, a lot of effort.
Yeah, it's impossible to conceive of the amount of work that took place. She'd go and park the car in town, go to the various grocery stores and pick up their leaflets, and she'd go and buy the loss leader here and the loss leader here and the loss leader and carry it back to the car. Mm-hmm. But it worked.
So that for you in the 60s when Chavez began organizing and the strike began in Delano, mm-hmm. you really experienced it as part of a bigger thing that was happening,
yes.
that was distressing and that worried you about what was happening in
yes.
society.
It wasn't just Cesar Chavez, it was the change in the mores of certain people trying to change the way of life of citizenry of the country and so on. And part of that change has taken place, and all of it is not bad. Part of it is not good. But it wasn't just Mr. Chavez. But there is another thing that ought to be mentioned. And that is that...
Don't you want to mention some of Mr. Chavez's philosophy, too? He was a student of... What was that man's name that believed in violence?
Oh... Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky's philosophy is. But part of that is Chavez didn't really espouse that totally. He has some ideas along that line, but not he didn't buy Saul Alinsky totally. But what I started to say is that I've been on national television any number of times, but one time I was on, and the MC said to me in a break when they have the advertising, "Mr. Grant, you seem like an honorable man, so I feel compelled to say this." I said, "Don't feel compelled to say anything to me. You don't have to." Nobody said, "I must." And this is some time ago. He said, "Walter Ruther and Cesar Chavez are one of a kind. They have an objective in mind off in the distance, and they're going to get there regardless of what they have to do to get there." And he said, "That's not your philosophy." I said, "No, it's not my theology. I don't adjust that way." And he said, "Yes, I know that. That's why I'm saying this to you. They are different from your ideas." In addition to that, there's a Presbyterian minister, Chris Hartmeyer, who I know as an individual, know him on a first-name basis, and he is Mr. Chavez Wright Bauer. And one time I got together all of the denominations that I could get together to talk to the board of the Northern California Council of Churches. It was headed by a man whose name I forget. It was a Scandinavian name with a double A. That's probably Danish, but I can't remember. He's a Lutheran. So he was a very fine gentleman. But he had asked me if I would get these people together, these farmers. Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Church of Christ, Nazarene, Church of God, anything you can think of, including, I think we had a couple from the Roman Catholic Church. And we wanted to talk about farm labor. And so I said to him when we got together, the men won't want Mr. Chris Hartmeyer here. They won't want him. He said, why not? I said, because he has lied to them. Oh, no, he said, Chris Hartmeyer, an ordained ministry, wouldn't do that. I said, call him in. Let's talk to him. So Chris came in, and I greeted him, and I said, I just want to ask two questions, Chris, that's all. And I want this chairman of the council to hear the answers. I said, Chris, do you believe that the end justifies the means? He said, anytime, yes, absolutely. I said, Chris, are you willing to lie in order to attain your objective? He said, anytime, day or night. And the chairman said, Chris, do you know what you said? Chris Hartman said, I know exactly what I said. Well, later, the interim minister at the Vice City Church asked me to come to Los Angeles Presbytery to talk about farm labor. And I said, I'll come, but I don't want any debate. I just don't believe in that. I don't want to. He said, you won't have to. He said, I just want you to inform the presbytery about the farmer's viewpoint on farm labor. I said, I'm willing to do that. And so I went, and Dr. McMartin said, I'm sorry, Alan, but he said, Chris says there has to be a debate, so you can turn around and go right home if you want to. I said, no, I've come 200 miles, and so I said, let's go ahead, but let's not have a vote. And Chris Hartmeyer said, oh, no, there has to be a vote. I said, but why do we have to have a vote, Chris? Why don't we just give them the facts from our own viewpoint and forget it from their point? We don't need to have them vote. They don't need to vote in the first place. Each one has his own opinion. He said, no, they have to vote. So we had the debate. And when it was over, they had the vote. And Chris got a handful of votes, and I got the rest of them. And I tried to say goodbye to him, but he was in the choir loft, his head in his hands, and he wouldn't look up to say goodbye. But again, I say, it isn't just farm labor. It's all of the factors that press upon people during certain times of history, and there always are pressures, no matter what time it is, war or rumors of war or economic or social problems. And when they come together into sharp focus, all at the same time, or many at the same time, we do have these repercussions that cause us difficulty. The church isn't going to fail. The fact that we only have 750 members in the Vice City Church doesn't mean it won't change. We should have three churches in that town, not just one with 750 members. But these things will recede in the minds of people as time goes on, and so they'll come back. But in the meantime, we lose members, and some of the more fundamentalist churches gain members. But people don't quit. People don't stop.
What were some of the things that happened in the Visalia Church, like between 65 and 70? Were there people that were coming down on different sides of the farm labor issue?
Yes. There's still a woman there that has been very active in the other side. And she would talk to Alan some, but she never went out to talk to any of the other growers that she could have found the story, gotten the farmer's side of the story from. And so she's still very much for what Caesar Chavez did. Caesar Chavez did.
Yeah, she's a very nice lady. She's an elder and active in the Presbytery. But I'd have to say, she's not as open-minded as I'd like her to be, and willing to listen to two sides. I'm no paragon of virtue, as far as that's concerned. But I do try to listen to the other side, and I do think Chavez did some good.
Tell me about that. What observations do you have about that?
About him having done some good. He got the farm labor to recognize that they are individuals with the same rights as any other individual in this country, that they have a right to a voice, and they ought to have the right to say what they think about their treatment, because I know farmers who mistreated them, and they didn't have any recourse. That's wrong. That's just as wrong as it can be. And I am not opposed to unions. I worked as a laborer when I was a very young man, trying to get money to go to school, and I saw the abuse that laboring people took. For instance, I saw what they called a pusher, not a foreman, but a pusher, stand in the middle of a steel plate while we had to lift it. And then half of us got under it with our backs and held it in position while they riveted it to the next plate beside it. And nobody could turn loose of it, because if you did, you know, they might drop it and cut somebody's legs. And one man spoke up against being cursed. The pusher jumped, hit him in the chest with his feet, knocked him down, and stomped him into unconsciousness. Well, those kind of things are just as reprehensible as can be. Of course, the rest of the crew, when the day was over, did something that caused them to have a new pusher the next day. They put him out of commission. They put him in the hospital. But those kind of things caused labor to go too far. And people just do go too far when they're after a certain objective. Like the MC said, that Chavez and Ruther are after a certain objective, and they're going to do anything they can to get there. And they are pressured by some of their more radical members to do those things, which they perhaps might not do of their own volition if they were thinking in terms of ethics and morals and decency. So those things happen. I've received accolade after accolade, and I've said, well, I had them all in boxes, and we loaned the house to our granddaughter and her husband when he got out of service, and they put them all up on the wall. They're back in boxes now, and I'm glad they are, because I didn't earn those things. She earned them by staying home. The children earned them by doing without their father. The doctor earned them by keeping me well so that I could do those things. Other people who contributed to the organization in which I worked did their part too, but I stood there and received it. The Japanese emperor gave me the highest honor they give anybody, any foreigner, because he said I helped start the dairy industry in Japan. Only 12 of us have gotten it, I think. MacArthur, Truman, and Ambassador Reischauer, and a few others. I didn't deserve that. Heifer Project deserved it. I took the heifers over there for the half Japanese, half GI orphans in the orphan home.
Oh, you were involved in the Heifer Project at the beginning?
I was on the National Board of Heifer Project, yes. So I didn't deserve that. Those kind of things that make me...
You did other things, though, like he worked in trade with Japan and with the trainee program that Farm Bureau had. And so it wasn't just Heifer Project, but it turns out, for whatever reason, he is a leader.
But it's embarrassing to receive those things when you know full well that you are only the instrument that receives it because other people did these things. And so I don't like them at all.
That just proves that he's a humble person.
Your own experiences and observations about the farm worker movement. Do you believe that Chavez is in favor of nonviolence?
I don't really know that, but I would guess that's true.
Well, you had Farm Bureau had a man that went and worked in the camp down in Southern California. What's it called?
Oh, you mean Chavez?
Keene.
Yeah, Keene, Chavez headquarters.
And he knows that this man got information to prove that Chavez did a lot of underhanded things, and also that Chavez was able to get money to, money rather illegally from the U.S. government to...
I don't know that it's illegal, Irene. It's just available, and if you're willing to take it for this, that, or the other objective, you can take it. And it's only substantiates what I said about Chavez and Ruther being willing to do anything to attain the objective, and also for Reverend Chris Hartmeyer, too.
But were papers even stolen from the Washington office where they were kept?
Yes.
So that they could not prove...
I don't know that to be a fact, but it is said. But then again, you have various people working on behalf of the movement who might not be supported by Chavez. You don't know that.
I know you have to be careful what you say because you have to have proof of it, but he even had an article in the Presbyterian magazine, Presbyterian Life, wasn't it?
I remember that. It was in the 67, 68, something like that.
Yeah. Well,
and in the area where Chavez was, there was a lot of damage done to farmers, to farm buildings and farm equipment and things like that.
Well, one of the things that they asked for was a boycott, just in order to reach a certain objective. Well, I don't know how evil that is, but I can remember coming out of church one Sunday and a lady who, with her husband and their children, did their vineyard work. They didn't hire anybody. Well, they might hire somebody to help prune or something, but basically the family did all the work. And she was crying, and I asked her, what's the trouble? What's your trouble? She said, what in the world are we going to do? Said, that's all our income, and Mr. Chavez is boycotting grapes. How do we sell them? That's all we have. I said, oh, I think we'll get it done one way or another. comforted whatever way I could. But again, a boycott is an evil thing, in my opinion. It's absolutely evil, and the church espoused the boycott. They didn't think about this Presbyterian lady who was almost beside herself because she didn't know how she was going to help take care of her family. And they did it all the work practically.
Some of them worked year-round and sent their children on to college and university.
Well, anything that happens, I don't care whether it's good or bad, somebody suffers because they can't fit into it or something. So I don't know that you can say that Chavez is bad. His objective was good, to get workers to be a part of the total community. The way they do it is not in agreement with my theology, but
how else might they have done that?
How could they? I don't know if they could any other way, because unless certain people are forced to recognize that they need to change, they don't change. I don't like to say that about people, but it's a fact. It's the same. We had a threat of strike against dairies. And so I came home from the Farm Bureau in Berkeley for a very short time, just a few days, and I said, let's organize this thing so you don't lose your income. So we made arrangements to pick up the milk and haul it to a processing plant in Modesto if there were a strike. And therefore the milk would not have to be dumped in a sewer. And there would be some return from it, not as much as for fluid milk, but some. And then we let it be known that arrangement had been made, and we killed the strike. It stopped it. But then I said to the dairyman, now that's not enough. We've done this much, but now what are you doing to preclude this happening again? And I told them what we were doing as far as farm labor was concerned, the benefits for the workers. And we made that information available, not by name, not by my name, but we said some dairymen are doing this, some are doing this, and some are requiring that the man milk cows and then feed the cows and then feed the calves and then wash up the milking utensils and so on. And some have a different man to feed the calves, some have a different man in the milk house, and some are working this many hours a day, some are working this many hours a day. Where do you fit into this? And we brought about a change in the dairy business by that letter and that information, because maybe they didn't want to go to the expense of doing these things, but they didn't want their workers going somewhere else for a job.
Mm-hmm.
So you use all kinds of gimmicks to get things done, but it got done. Well, Chavez didn't make those changes. The dairymen made them themselves, because it was brought to their attention that it would be to their advantage to make some of those changes. So
what do you think that it took so long for grape growers to see that it would be to their advantage to make, or maybe they did, I don't know.
Some of them did, some of them didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the information wasn't known as to how much money the family did earn. Now, many times children were involved too, but together they earned well and were happy at it.
You're talking about the farm workers.
Yes, yeah. Many of the farm workers.
One illustration of that is that we had, when we had 17 employees, we had maybe three, with Spanish surnames. Estrada was one of them, and he was a key man. And Frank Fierro was another, and a very capable man. When I sold the dairy, I made it a point to find jobs for all these men. I used to be on the high school board, and so they knew me, and I used to be chairman of the school trustees association, so I knew all the school people. So I found some of them jobs on caretakers on school grounds and so on. I knew people in the county, and so I found jobs for some of them there. Anyway, I found jobs for all of them. Came to Frank Fierro, and I said, Frank, what kind of a job are you looking for when I close up this dairy? Oh, he said, Alan, don't worry about me. I said, no, I don't worry about you, Frank, but what would you like to do? I'll help you find a job. He said, you don't need to help me. I said, what do you mean? You need to work. I said, you're not married, but you take care of your mother. And he said, oh, I don't have to worry about it. I'll get a job whenever I need it. I said, what are you going to do in the meantime? He said, I have 5 rentals. I own those houses outright. I don't owe anything on them. I have an income. I'll get a job when I want it. I said, Frank, how did you get these 5 rentals? Well, I said, Alan, before I went to work for you, I used to pick fruit. All the explanation he made. So when they say the poor downtrodden farm worker is so poor that he can't do anything, it depends upon the farm worker. Frank Fierro doesn't have an education. When he was raised in Arizona or New Mexico, I forget what he told me, by his grandfather. And when he started school, they thought he was handicapped mentally, and so the Lions Club bought him glasses when he was in the 5th grade, and he went up like that. From there on, he was just a top student. He's smart, but farm workers are like farmers. Some are smart, some are not, and so maybe though some that are not need food stamps and welfare and somebody to hold their hand and so on, but some don't need that, and so when we lump them all together and say farm workers are thus and such, that isn't true. I was a farm worker too, and I have a degree of intelligence, not as much as some, not as much as one of my brothers with a genius IQ, but I can get along. And farm workers are the same. The Mexican man who works with me now, he was Robert's hired man before Robert left the farm, a very intelligent man, no education, but very, very intelligent, very aggressive as far as wanting to do things for his family is concerned. And I said to him one day, Carmen, you can't weld, can you? He said, well, I watched Robert. I think I could weld if you want me to try. I said, well, why don't you try and do some welding, and then you'll have another occupation in case you need it sometime. He did a real good job of welding, and he never welded before. I showed him where he had made a mistake or two, and I said, you won't do that next time, but as you become better at this, you'll have something else you can do sometime if you can't find a farm job. They're all different. Two people are the same.
But overall, you did see that there have been, or continue really, it hasn't changed all that much, to be some problems where the employer did not really treat the workers the way that, say, that you would treat
them. You find that anywhere, whether it's farm work or anything else. I cited the instance when I worked for Edward L. Doheny when he was building a refinery. That was reprehensible. And I worked in other places I worked for 6 months laying hardwood floor, and he was paying me 45 cents an hour and paying somebody else twice that. And I said to the boss, I'd like to have a little more money. He said, you haven't been here long enough. I said, but You have me laying the floor in the closets, in the halls, and in the small rooms where it takes more time to get a certain number of square yards done. The other man's laying the floor in the living room and the dining room and the bedrooms where he can do it more quickly. And I am laying more square yards than he is. So I think I'm entitled to a little more money. No, he said, you haven't been here long enough. Well, I think I'd been there long enough, so I found another job. I didn't stay there. But that's what I did. I didn't strike or something like that. I went somewhere else and earned more money.
Do you think that's comparable?
I don't think it's possible for some people to do that. Economic reasons would preclude their being able to do it because they had a family to take care of. I was alone. There are other reasons just as valid that they can't do it. But I was independent, and so I said, I won't stay. You won't pay me more money for doing more work than the other man, or pay me as much money as he's getting, I just won't stay. But everybody can't do that. So there is a valid reason for farm workers or anybody else having a union. But the last few days I've been trying to get some things done out here on this ranch that we're trying to reinvigorate. And two men have come to buy things that I want to sell, to get rid of there, both of whom were active in labor movements, officers in labor union, both of whom said labor has gone too far. We have caused this country a lot of problems in the, high level of labor costs now, and therefore the difficulty in foreign trade, the difficulty in selling what we have to sell. For instance, we have a cargo preference law which causes us to pay up to $120 to $160 a ton to ship it out of here, and they can ship it in a foreign flag ship for half of that. And so Russia canceled the 500,000 metric ton order for wheat last year and bought it from Australia for 23% less than we would sell it for. So those labor union people understand that. Labor is beginning to understand that they've gone too far.
What
they're just beginning.
What happened on your trip to Japan about the labor?
You mean a long time ago when I took those cattle, well, I asked the mate, why do you get a full year's pay for 6 months' work? He said, to make room for another mate for 6 months. I said, why don't we have two ships and have the best merchant marine in the world, which we need? Mm-hmm. Well, he said, we don't have it. I said, I get a full year's pay for 6 months' work. That's not right. Because that affects you, affects us, affects everybody. So labor has gone too far.
Well, when your light bulb went out and when
that's crazy.
And when your ship had the motor trouble too, that...
Well, I've forgotten that, but when I needed a light bulb in the room, the stateroom they had for me when I was taking care of those cattle. Yeah, I was a housemate for the cattle on the way over on the freighter. And I asked the chief electrician if I could get somebody, it wasn't a light bulb, it was a fuse. I asked him if I could have a fuse. No, he said, I can't give you the fuse, the electrician has to do that. He said, why in the world did you tell me that before 5 o'clock? I said, do you test your lights in the daytime to make sure you're going to have them at night? He said, well, no. But he said, I have to put two men on every job, and the minimum pay is 2.5 hours. So I've got to pay two men 2.5 hours to unscrew that fuse and screw another one in. I said, well, can't you? Well, I said, forget it. I can go to bed in the dark this time, put it in tomorrow. He said, will you do that? I said, certainly I'll do that. He said, fine, we'll do it that way. But he said, I'll come before the ship owners, and they'll want to know why I'm spending so much money on electrical problems in the ship when we didn't have electrical problems the other times. He said, this just adds one more thing to my problem of satisfying the ship owners. Well, those kind of things are just plain silly. There isn't any sense in that. Why couldn't he just give me that fuse and let me screw it in, except that somebody might tell on him? Mm-hmm. And then he would be in trouble with the union.
To your knowledge, in the farm labor, where there are contracts, I know that there's been a lot of change, mm-hmm. who has contracts and so on, but do you think that there's that kind of thing going on under UFW?
Well, I don't know intimately how much goes on, but I know that unions, generally speaking, operate in the same manner. And therefore, if something needs to be done, they feel that it needs to be done, they'll get it done one way or another. Because if they don't, then they're no longer a union leader. They have to get it done. And so they have to get it done, whatever it takes to get it done. And so people will do unethical things even though they wouldn't if they were individually involved in it, and not for the organization. And so how bad that is in the minds of one side of the issue is one point of view. How bad it is on the side of the union is another point of view. And, I'm not going to say it's totally reprehensible because they have to get the job done.
As an active churchman, what were some of your concerns specific? I mean, I know you had a professional position with the Farm Bureau, but did you have some specific concerns about the church and its choices as to whether or not to support what was happening?
My main concern with the church activity was not just Chavez again. It was the total attitude of the church in abandoning the evangelistic perception of its responsibility and moving over to almost a total concern with social, political, and economic problems. And that's not bad to be concerned about those things, but to be unconcerned about evangelism seemed to me to be totally wrong. And that's my concern about it. And when a church moves to that kind of a position, then there's inclination on the part of ministers to have their opinions, their attitudes, their precepts clouded, so they're not seeing things clearly. I was on the Pastor Seek Committee when we chose a minister to come to the Visalia Church, and I like him. I still like him real well, but he is a liberal. I'm a conservative, to whatever degree that may be true in an individual. He preached a sermon one day, a good sermon.
This is your current, the current pastor?
No,
previous.
And he was condemnatory about what happened because there was a strike because a building was to be put up and something was, there was a difference of opinion on the part of labor and the builders and so on. So there was a demonstration, and one man lay himself down behind the tracks of a Caterpillar tractor. And the operator of the tractor backed up his tractor to do his work and ran over him, killed him. And the minister was deploring the fact that this man was killed and that that man ran over him, and that these people were only there to show strength to stop whatever was being done they didn't think should be done. Well, as I left the church, I said, I have to disagree with you to a degree. I don't feel sorry for the man who was run over. He's gone. But you believe in an afterlife, so do I. And if he was doing what he thought was the right thing to do, and if it was the right thing to do, he's in no trouble now. But what about the man who was operating the tractor? I said, did you ever sit on the seat of a Caterpillar tractor? No, he said, never did. I said, try it sometime. You can't see who's behind it and under the seat. You don't even know anybody's there if he is there. So the man who ran over him has to live the rest of his life with the fact that he killed a man. Unintentionally, but he killed him. And he has to live with that day and night for the rest of his life. And he was only doing what he was paid to do, which is drive that tractor. I'm sympathetic with the poor man that has to suffer daily and nightly with the thought that he killed a man unintentionally, but killed him just the same. He said, I never thought of that. Of course he didn't think of it. He was thinking about this man who was doing what he and the minister both thought should be done, which is demonstrating against putting up the building. I was thinking not of that, but of the individual who ran over him and who had to live with that. He never even thought of that since then. So a minister, because the church takes a position, the minister is likely, if his inclinations to think in those terms, likely to take a position which is not valid, not realistic, and not thought out seriously. And so ministers did things during this change which they wouldn't do if they had had really thought of both sides of the issue. This minister, same minister, was for the boycott. He didn't know that this lady was crying outside the church and talking to one of his elders about, what in the world can I do to feed my family? They're going to boycott and stop the sale of what we worked all year to produce. The minister didn't know that, so he's all for the boycott.
But also, some farmers went clear out of business, and that took away many of the jobs that some of those workers were depending on. And some of those workers were happy because they had year-round jobs. You got there and back?
What happened? Weren't there a few farmers who signed contracts early on as their way of dealing with the boycott?
Yeah, a few of them, yes.
Did that seem like a sensible solution for their problem?
From their point of view, yes. It was a sensible solution because they pushed the problem off onto someone else and they didn't have to handle it. Whenever anybody does anything like that, it bears examination to see whether they did it out of altruism or whether they did it selfishly or why they did it. Mm-hmm. And every single person bears a responsibility for some introspection to see whether or not what he's doing is altruistic or selfish. Everybody bears that responsibility every day to see whether or not he really is doing what he should do. Mm-hmm. And so I can't answer for those people as to whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. Economically, apparently, it was the right thing to do for them. Whether it was the right thing to do theologically is another matter. They have to answer that. I don't know.
And in terms of the wider farming community, did you feel that had some negative impact on other farmers?
Not necessarily. I don't believe it did for other farmers. It perhaps encouraged Mr. Chavez, but nothing wrong with that, for him to be encouraged in what he thinks is the right thing to do. But it probably encouraged him to some degree and encouraged some farm workers to say to their bosses, whether Chavez was involved or not, well, so-and-so gets more money over there. I did the same thing when I got this information out to dairymen that certain dairymen were only working their men, only had to milk. They didn't have to do anything else. Certain other dairymen had their men milk and do something else. And so each one then had to take a look at his own operation and say, well, am I fitting into this whole pattern, or am I unique in my attitude here? And so I was doing the same thing that these other people were doing in signing a contract.
You all bring in the fact, too, that the number of farmers has decreased so much over the years, and what the reasons are.
Well, there are any number of reasons, and you can't list them if you stayed here all day. But there were 12 million farmers in the turn of the century, 6 million 40 years later, 3 million today. And with the attrition we see because of the economic situation today, what will there be at the turn of the century, 1 million?
Although that's happening nationwide, and unionization is only
a
very small
thing. It's just one of the
things,
and it has very little to do with the attrition.
A lot of people nowadays don't even realize where their food comes from.
I know. Yeah. So doesn't it come from the grocery store?
Yeah.
Doesn't it come from the grocery store?
Yeah. Yeah.
Magically
and
appears there.
The grocery store and the garden, how the garden, they don't relate a cow to the milk.
Well, I think that's absolutely true.
But at Presbytery the other day, they talked about the attrition of farmers right now. In fact, so many of them are going broke. And that they didn't really know until I spoke at Presbytery and said that this is a worldwide phenomenon, that the world's farmers, not America, the world's farmers are producing more than the market can absorb, not more than hungry people could use, but more than the market can absorb. And therefore, worldwide, we have a problem. And we see it more clearly right here because they are friends of ours and members of the church right beside us. But with Brazil, with 250 million new acres of production and 250 million in the process of going into production, and 800,000 young Japanese over there learning to speak Portuguese and becoming Brazilian citizens and going to ship that material, corn, soybeans, and wheat to the Asiatic countries, we have a problem ahead of us. And what can Brazil do other than that? Their international monetary situation is such that they've got to pay off the international debt they have, $100 billion that they owe, and their inflation is almost beyond belief. They have to do something, and so we can't condemn them for that. Well, that's another matter.
So two of your major concerns, I don't know how much time you have.
All the time you need.
But so two of your major concerns, it sounds like, in terms of the church, would be actions taken by the church that seem to overtake an interest in evangelism. And pastors and other church leaders that don't really conscientiously try to listen to two sides of an issue.
That's a large part of it. I went to Nicaragua. You meant somebody may have told
I knew that because I know Larry Hickson.
Oh.
Yeah, he's in our area.
And I said I would go, providing that I saw somebody other than those outlined for visits by the National Council of Churches, because the National Council of Churches is a big part of our problem, from my biased point of view. And so I did see evangelical pastors. And I said to them, I will not tell anybody that I talk to you at home by name. I'll tell them I talk to evangelical pastors, but not by your names, and I have all their cards. But somebody in the audience did tell, and so they were harassed after we left, because the Sandinistas, if they are inducted in the army and they will give up the Bible and recant, they can get out of the Sandinista army. If they don't, they stay in there, and they are harassed.
Is that what they told you?
These evangelical pastors told me that, and after we left, I found out in a circuitous manner that they were harassed because somebody did tell who they were that they met with us. There were three of them. One of them was the chairman of their organization. At the last meeting they had before I met with them, they had 450 pastors at their meeting out of a membership of something over 500. And the Sandinistas harassed them continually. It isn't just the Roman Catholic Bishop Obando who is harassed. It's the evangelical pastors, too. And I met with the independent union leader down there, and I learned some things from him. And I met with others who you're not supposed to meet with because I insisted on it. And I got an entirely different picture from that given by the National Council of Churches. And so I think the National Council of Churches and our involvement, Methodist, Presbyterian, Episcopal and so on, involved with the National Council of Churches and their almost total liberal attitude and focus is part of our problem in the churches. If we were not involved with the National Council of Churches, we wouldn't have as much of a problem, because Presbyterians are pretty loyal to their various levels of judicatory. And not all of them. Some of them don't want to be bothered with Presbytery. Some of them are not interested in General Assembly. But true Presbyterians are pretty loyal to their church's system of making decisions. But they don't like the National Council of Churches.
Is that quite true in this
Presbyterian? It's pretty predominant among Presbyterians. They don't like the National Council of Churches.
That's not true in my Presbytery. But that's true here in your
Presbytery. Maybe it's more true in the rural.
Yes, it would be more true in the rural area than it would be in the city area.
Did you ever have a sense that the position of support for Chavez among church people might attract some church people, or was your experience pretty much the opposite?
Pretty much the opposite. There are those who are for the church's involvement and support of Mr. Chavez. But I'd have to say that my experience is not just here in the valley, because I went to church wherever I was, whether it's Jerusalem or Geneva or
Berkeley.
Chicago or wherever. I just always go to church. Well, I have to tell you one thing that I'm ashamed of, the word go. I went to the North Avenue Presbyterian Church where Lincoln used to go and where Marshall was the minister in Washington, D.C., because I could walk there, regardless of the weather, from the hotel where I stayed.
It wasn't stationed in Washington, D.C., but he went there often there to testify for different.
So when I went to that church, I forgot that it was a change of time. So I was sitting in a little park there waiting for church to start. And a man came by in work clothes, not a bum. He asked me, could he have a quarter to eat breakfast? And I just shook my head. And he went on, and immediately, as soon as I did it, and he walked on, I said to myself, what in the world is the matter with you, man? You said to that man, the church doesn't matter. That's what you said for 25 cents. You told a man the church doesn't matter. And I tried to find him, and I didn't find him. And I thought to myself, what in the world, how crazy can a person be for 25 cents? I told him the church doesn't matter. So we do things like that and rue the day afterwards, but it's too late then. And so when you're in a rural area, conservative, ultra-conservative, I guess you'd have to say, in almost any rural area, because people made a living the hard way, and they don't have much sympathy with people that don't make a living the hard way. And so they have a certain viewpoint, whether Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. That's a very conservative viewpoint. And when something happens in the church that is the opposite, they don't like it. They don't like it at all, regardless of their political affiliation.
Well, is there anything else that you would especially want me to know about either about your general view about the conflict that arose in the church, or about anything specific in your own congregation when you were able to be there? By salient.
He was here quite a bit when he was in California, because if he wasn't involved on the weekend, he would come down to Vice City.
Yeah.
I was reminded some of these things come into your mind when you're talking about something that happened that long ago, that his article was requested by many people, because on the front of the cover of the Presbyterian Life magazine, the same time they had that article within the magazine, they had Shala's picture on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so people...
That was the same edition when his picture was on the cover. I remember a copy went, but I didn't remember it was the same issue.
I don't remember.
Not with his article. They demanded them that his article should follow, mm-hmm. because they almost deified Chavez in that Presbyterian Life.
I would have heard if there had been, but I haven't gotten into it yet.
I'm on three committees in Presbyterian. I think that's a mistake. Well, there are more people should be involved in Presbyterian. And so
I think you need to ask to get off of those two.
I'm on the Hispanic Committee, the Evangelism Committee, and the New Church Development Committee. And I think they ought to have more people involved instead of having one person on three committees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to do it, but I don't know any good reason for doing it.
But you really don't have time while you're doing this other.
The farming.
Yes.
And he's wondering why his back is hurting, and he's been lifting far more than he should have lifted. He had a back operation about 2 years ago, and he's undone some of the good that the back operation did, I fear.
Well, I had two spines developed, pressing on the spinal cord, and mm-hmm. so I was losing use of this leg.
Oh,
and so the doctors, I said, I don't see any point in having an operation because I don't have too many more years to go. And he said, well, either operation or wheelchair. And I said, well, I'll get the operation.
Yeah, that's not a very good choice to make.
But I feel fine, except that I've had back pain since I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it escalates if I use my back mm-hmm. too hard.
Yeah.
Like lifting bailed hay and lifting some of the things he's been lifting out here.
There was one last question I don't think that we had touched on, and that was in the Visalia Church, You mentioned the one pastor that you were on the committee to call, and that would have been in the 60s? Or do you remember?
Robert was in high school, and he was born in, what, 48? So
that would have been the early 60s that he would have been here. So was that the person that was there at the time that the Delano strike began?
He was there during, it was Alan Phil. Mm-hmm. I don't like to name names and condemn people, but you just will know it's Alan Phil, and I like the man.
You must have had more than one person on that staff, such a big church. Did you have an associate?
Yes, he had, one other minister while I was gone, and another minister part of the time while I was there. Did they have two others besides Alan Phil at one time?
Yeah, at one time, for a short
time. And then most of the time they just had one other.
Yeah.
And that was a time when long hair came in for males, and one of the ministers had long hair, and that didn't please a lot of people.
I'll bet. But so were both the pastors kind of supportive of what was happening with the farm workers?
Yes, and in one case they were, yes.
And as far as the congregation itself, what would be your ballpark guess as to how they felt about
it? It's hard to say that, except I can, a previous minister, the one we had, when I went into the church years and years ago, I knew him as a personal friend, not just a minister, and was very supportive of what he was trying to get done, and that's when we had 1,250 members, and I was student in Sunday school for that time. And he said to me one time, Alan, there are distinctly three groups in this church. There are the professionals, which includes lawyers, doctors, and teachers, and school administrators, and so on. There are the business people on Main Street, and there are the farmers. Three separate groups. And I said, well, where do I belong? Where do I fit? Because I'm a farmer. I fit there? He said, no, you don't. Said, you don't fit any one of them. I said, you're unique among them. You can fit in any one of the three, but you don't. You don't fit anywhere. You're separate. I said, well, I don't know whether that's a compliment or not. But anyway, wait a minute till I finish answering
okay.
the question. So you have those three groups. Well, the business people and the farmers would be opposed to any liberal attitude. The teachers among the professionals might, some of them, be in favor of the church's attitude toward farm labor, and some of them wouldn't be. So it would be a minority among this third group of professionals, including teachers, who would be in sympathy with what the church was doing. The other two parts would not be in sympathy with it. That's part of the reason for the attrition or the decline in membership.
I was just going to say that during the same time, they brought in a man from the Bay Area who was a pastor that said that marijuana did very little damage, if any. And, you know, later they said that most people that smoked marijuana went on, or many people that smoked marijuana went on to use heroin or something stronger. But that particular pastor from the Bay Area was condoning the use of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so that, of course, upset many people too.
Well, of course, in addition to that, Irene, was the first thing that happened. That was when Alan Phelps, at the request of one of the doctors in the congregation, brought in a man who stated categorically to the congregation that marijuana was not harmful.
I think that's the same one I'm talking about.
Maybe so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, practically nobody in the congregation agreed with us, with that theory. Mm-hmm. It's just too conservative a congregation to have those kinds of ideas promoted. Just doesn't work. It works against the main reason for the church's being.
Well, I really appreciate getting to talk with both of you.
And I brought her along because I knew I'd forget lots of things.